Hello, and welcome back to the Double Take Podcast with Jess and Jenny. And today, our guest, Fallon, whom you may remember from our Last of Us series. I think we did quite a few episodes. We did not quite episode by episode, but almost episode by episode. And you probably remember because she's a fountain of information on all things games, specifically Last of Us. But also we learned Fallout, which is the topic of today's episode. So I'm here with the two of them. And I'm super excited to get started. I'm going to let you take it away, Jess.
Thank you to Fallon for joining us. She is really just the best. If you didn't listen to our Last of Us episodes, just so knowledgeable and fun to talk to about this stuff. So I was really excited when she told me she is also interested in the Fallout games and has backstory background with that. So thank you again, Fallon. We're very, very excited.
I'm very excited to be back. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I think before we jump into questions for Fallon, we're going to start with just our overall feelings about the show in a non-spoiler fashion. Although I think later in the episode, we will definitely be saying spoilers. So just a forewarning for that. I'm just going to start. I absolutely loved this season of television. I thought it was so well done. I had low expectations, admittedly, but it like really blew my expectations out of the water. I had just a great time watching this. And yeah, I'll leave it at that for now and kick it over to Jenny.
Yeah, leaving Fallon for last because I feel like you have the most potential baggage with your experience.
Baggage.
Yeah, I unfortunately did have expectations because Jess, you watched it first. And so I went in expecting very good things. And I will say after the first episode, that was an excellent pilot episode of television. And I think I really loved like 2/3 of this season. There were a few episodes here and there, specifically like episodes 2 and 3, and then maybe like 5 that I found a little boring. And I know that if you know the games, probably like those things are pulling in things that are going to happen later. But I like quickly glommed onto a few of the storylines and then was a little less interested in some of the others. And I'm sure that will change because I'm like definitely invested in a season 2. But I was a little bit more lukewarm than you, Jess. But still overall very positive experience.
That's fair. I do think my low expectations like did a lot because as soon as I liked the pilot, I was like, I need to binge this whole series and put it into my brain immediately because I was excited. But yeah, Fallon, what about you?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your perspectives on it because the first thing I thought from the pilot was for people that have no idea what any of this stuff is, how is this going to work? Are you going to be really confused? Are you going to be kind of immediately turned off? Because it's like they kind of threw several different storylines at you at one time and they did a lot of show not tell. And so, which I like, but I also have all the background. I know what the Brotherhood of Steel is. I know what the Enclave is. I know what all these things are, so I can kind of fill in the blanks. So that was my big curiosity, was how it would work. And it's interesting to hear the varying perspectives you all have from not having played the game. But I think this show was outstanding. I loved every single second of it. I had a blast watching it. I thought they did such an incredible job at taking this really, really huge universe and telling a new story within it. This kind of gets into what we're going to talk about in terms of the games, but they were able to craft a whole new story within a universe and actually make it part of the canon, which is really fascinating. So instead of doing something where they told a separate story that we haven't seen before and it's not related to any of the other things, it is fully going to be canon now. It's its own thing, which means that if they choose to make another game, the game is going to use the show as actual story canon, which is fascinating, really hard to do, and done very, very well. So I loved it. I had a great time. Like I said, all of the little things that were specific call outs to the game gave me all those fun dopamine hits of like, I know what that is. I know what that is. But it also just told a really good standalone story that I thought was well executed. So I had a great time.
Amazing. I want to start off with just a question about, you kind of referenced this. Obviously, you have a lot of familiarity with these games and you've played them. But if you could talk a little bit more about what your background is on them, like have you played all of them? I know there are multiple. I don't know much, but I'll just let you take it from here.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to, like I said, this is massive. We're talking about a franchise that's been around since the late 90s and has had multiple iterations of being put out on different platforms, being produced by different studios. Different studios have bought the rights to this story and kind of done it their own way. So it's like there's so much to unpack, and it would honestly bore the crap out of anyone listening if I were to go that granular. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start by talking about the difference between a story narrative game and an open world RPG, because that's the difference we're talking about. So if any of you have listened to me talk about The Last of Us or listened to any of the Double Take episodes about The Last of Us, you know that that is based on a narrative game that tells a very specific story. You play as the main character, and it takes you across all of those different story beats just in a different form of media, which in this case is TV. In this particular case, Fallout is an open world RPG, which means that there is no specific arc that you are following as a specific character. So for instance, I'll just take Fallout 4, which was the most recent iteration of the series. You are a vault dweller who, after the bombs fall, you go into one of the vaults and you get put into a cryogenic sleep, and you wake up. And at the point that you wake up, you realize that your husband and, in my case, husband, this is getting difficult because, again, you pick your sex, right? So you pick if you're a male or you're a female first. You pick a name for yourself, you do character creation, you make yourself look a certain way, you get to make all these options, and then it throws you into the story. So you're kind of playing as yourself. And in my case, I was a female, so I had a husband and a child. And then that husband and child get woken up out of cryo early, they get taken out of the vault, you're watching all of it happen, you're panicking, you're like, what's going on? And then you get back, put back into cryo sleep, you wake up, now it's 200 years in the future, and you go out into the wasteland to try to find your family. So that's one example of a classic Fallout story. So that's what Fallout 4 is about. But every single one of the Fallout games has a different main story, but then also has subsequent side quests that you can do where you make different decisions. So when you're having conversations with characters, you get to choose what you might want to respond to them and say. And every single decision that you make impacts the relationships that you have in the world. It impacts maybe the different factions that you might join. Again, using Fallout 4 as an example, they have different factions in that game. One of them is the Brotherhood of Steel, which you all saw part of in the show. Another one's called the Railroad. And then another one's called the Minutemen. They all have their own motivations in the wasteland. They all have different things that they're after. And based on the decisions you make and the relationships you build, by the end, you might be a member of the Brotherhood of Steel, or you might be a member of the Minutemen. So the difference between Last of Us and something like Fallout is it's so choice-based, and it's so based upon the different things that you do in the world that impacts the story. So all of that to say that this show, none of the main characters are characters that are actually in any of the Fallout games. But the themes of those characters are. So there are ghouls, for instance. There are many vault dwellers. There are many people in the Brotherhood of Steel. So they kind of chose characters from each of the notable factions or different groups that you would see in the game. And then they told you individual stories within the universe. So that's kind of the main difference between something like Last of Us and Fallout.
Are there any of the like side characters? I feel like if you like play a game like that, I would expect there to be like a random person who gives you information at one point. Like, are there any people who have names or backstories from the games that are at all featured in the television show?
Yeah, pretty much the only one is Robert House, who
actually, remember.
You'd have to really be paying attention. Exactly. So in the boardroom towards the end, when it's all of the executives.
Oh yeah. Okay.
He is the executive for a company called Robco. And if you see that at the end and you're a game fan, you're like, oh, well, I know that guy. I know what he does. That's something that's going to come in what I'm assuming will be season two. But honestly, outside of that, general names of actual characters, no. It's more so just people that represent certain groups.
Gotcha. Yeah, I noticed in that boardroom, all of the nameplates had different companies on it. And I wondered if that would come in or if that was like part of the game. But I guess it's more, like you said, like the concepts and the groups themselves rather than specific people. That's cool.
Right. Yes. However, there are events that happen in this game that will impact the canon and the lore of the overarching history of the world, I guess. So a little bit of background on the history. because you're also probably wondering, why does everything look like it's like the 1950s and 60s when it's 2077? Like, why does it look like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
to be honest, I was just like, all right, sci-fi, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting because it's essentially based upon how certain events of the world went that are a little bit different than ours. So really everything up to post-World War II in this universe is the same as ours. So everything that's happened with the United States has happened essentially the same way. We did participate in the Vietnam War. A lot of those things did happen. It really starts to veer off after that point because the Cold War never ends is pretty much the idea here, right? Is that Cold War just keeps going and going and going. And they play around with the idea of how does that impact the technology that we developed? How does that impact what was most important to the United States when it came to the things they were investing money in and how capitalism kind of impacted all of that? And in April 2052, in this universe, is when a resource war breaks out, which is really the main conflict that eventually leads to the bombs dropping. What's interesting about the show, though, is that when there is this reveal of, hey, maybe it was Vault-Tec, actually, that dropped these bombs, that's where we start to see some different canon that we have not seen in the games. We really don't get any Vault-Tec history in the games outside of, like, little bits of conversation hearsay, but we don't get any of that detail that we do in the show.
I have so many questions.
I know, it's a lot.
Well, so that, I mean, that thing, the last thing you just said feels like big, and I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
I am still trying to wrap my head around, there's four Fallouts, yeah. I assume based on you said Fallout 4.
Well, is five technically. There's five.
Okay. Is each one a different setting or a different, like, how do they differ from each other? Mm-hmm. Is there like just a quick synopsis that would explain that?
Yeah. So here's the timeline. So there's five games. There's the original Fallout, there's Fallout 2, there's Fallout 3, Fallout 4, and then there's a game called Fallout 76, which is like a prequel that actually is an open world online game. So you can play online with friends, but it still exists in the world. The complicated part is that it not all of that goes linearly. So the actual timeline is in 2102 is when Fallout 76 takes place. And that's the most recent game that came out in 2018. And that's supposed to be 25 years after the Great War, and it takes place in West Virginia. Then you have the original Fallout, which came out in 1997, and that's 2161 in the Fallout timeline. Now that takes place in California, and that's where you get your first interaction with Shady Sands, which you guys saw on the show, right? Which is supposed to be this kind of like utopia that was developed by people post-war to try to recreate what the United States had previously with like resources and caring for people and medical care and all of that. So that was a big exciting thing for OG Fallout fans because Shady Sands is the first settlement that you actually come into contact with in the Wasteland. From there, in 1998 was Fallout 2. That's still also on the West Coast. Shady Sands has grown further, and then you actually get a lot more information in that one about the New California Republic, which was a group that didn't just exist in Shady Sands. It had multiple areas within the West Coast that it inhabited, and it was kind of like a larger growing civilization. And then from there, in 2258, you have Fallout 3, which came out in 2008. I realize it's a lot of dates, it's confusing. That's supposed to be in, like I said, 2258, so years later. And in that one, it actually takes place in DC. So if you ever were to touch a Fallout game, it's pretty cool. It is an East Coast game. You actually see DC, like the entire world, sort of post-nuclear DC. It's very disturbing, but that's a really cool iteration of the game. And then Fallout New Vegas came out in 2010, and that takes place in 2281 and is what the city that you see at the very end in the distance there, that is post-nuclear Vegas. And so that is going to come into play with that game when they get there. And then lastly is Fallout 4, which is in 2288. And that one came out in 2015. So that's kind of like the grand scheme timeline. Most of these games, you're playing as a vault dweller who wakes up in your vault to something happening, right? And there's a mission that usually takes you out into the wasteland that you have to, there's always a main storyline, and then there's lots of side quests. It's like the basic way that they generally set up each game. The main difference is in New Vegas, you actually play as a courier. So somebody that has always been in the wasteland, and you don't come out as a vault dweller right away. But most of the time you're a vault dweller.
Okay. That helped. Was very helpful. Okay. I have a follow-up question from that, but then just like my fun question, which is if somebody was just going to like jump in and play one of these games, do you like, where should, in your opinion, where should they start? What game should they pick up?
That's a great question. I would say Fallout 4 is the most accessible and the easiest to jump into if you just want the experience. I will say the original Fallout and Fallout 2, I have not even played. They're from the 90s. Most of it, you can only get them for the PC, and they are like old school games. Whereas Fallout 4 is much more recent, in 2015. And I think as far as an introduction just to open world RPGs in general, if you've never played one, Fallout 4 is a great way to introduce yourself to that kind of thing.
Oh, that's so cool. I will maybe check it out.
Because you say like at least the first two Fallouts are so much more old school in their, I guess, even in their rendering, like is the TV show close to what you see in the more recent video games? Like, is it cool to see some of these things brought to life in a way that sort of looks more realistic, or like, is it pretty similar?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Cause even graphically, the game, by the time it gets to Fallout 4 and now even into Fallout 76, the graphics are great, but they're not Last of Us graphics. I'll put it that way. So they're not like these really pretty iterations of these things. They're still fairly grainy, you know, somewhat video game graphics. So even just to see this stuff pop off the screen in the way that Amazon did it. And they did such a great job with like the gore too, which actually, Jess, was one of the reasons I'm shocked you liked this so much, because it's so gory. I mean, there were moments where even I was like, oh my God, like this is excessive gore. But I'm glad you liked it.
I think because it balanced it with the like lighthearted tone, it like worked for me, and I can just kind of look away, but it's not like constant and all the time dark and depressing in addition to being gory. I think maybe that's the key for me. But no, I totally like hid my eyes. Don't worry.
Yeah. And that's how the game is too, because it's so, and I know this is one of the questions you'd asked me to kind of think about, Jess, because the theme is really zany and kind of goofy. And I was having this debate as to whether or not it's campy. I don't know, but it's definitely a vibe where one minute you're like, ooh, that was really disturbing. And the next minute you're like, this is kind of goofy. I don't know. And that's exactly how the games are, where it's this very serious thing. I mean, you're in a post-nuclear world, but there's so many odd characters that you come across and just really strange things that happen that it gives it that kind of fun vibe.
Yeah, I was thinking specifically of that question when I was watching the show and the giant like sea monster thing or whatever it's called, like appears, I was like, what? I was still wrapping my head around what the show was at that point. And I was like, what the heck is that? That looks like ridiculous. And then I was like, okay, I'm recalibrating like what's going on here. It's a lot more silly than I thought because of that. So is that kind of like, that's a character maybe that like, or a creature that appears in the game?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's lots of creatures that all are a result of just, essentially like poisoning from from the radioactive blasts. And so you come across all kinds of weird stuff. They didn't actually show as many creatures as I expected them to, because there really are a ton in the Fallout universe. Part of that could have been budget. I mean, it's not cheap to do graphics like that. But I'm hoping that we're going to see some more maybe in future iterations, because there's a lot of fun stuff like that in the games.
Just to continue off of that for like a hot second, is the goriness sort, I like felt torn back and forth in a bunch of ways, because like you said, Jess, like I started to recalibrate the way that I was thinking of it, because it was very video game-esque in the way they showed so much gore, but also in these bright colors and like with the like upbeat songs in the background. And so I had finally come to it as like, oh yeah, this feels very video game-esque. I'm not super worried about the gore, because it seems like in this universe, like people can survive without these limbs, or like they'll grow back or whatever. I don't like, didn't really understand the physics, but I was just like, okay, it's not that big of a deal if you cut off some guy's head, but then it starts to rot. And I'm like, is he coming back? Anyway, we're getting into spoiler territory. My point is, I felt I had accepted the level of gore and what was happening. And then they killed a dog. And I was like, oh no, I was wrong about the type of show that this is. And then, I mean, spoiler alert, the dog is back. And so I was like very emotionally roller coastered, turning that into a verb. And I still am concerned about the dog situation, but it seems like he's here to stay. But yeah, I was like, I don't know if that was a unique to me experience, but I definitely felt betrayed.
Yeah, I think we should just go ahead and put the spoiler warning here. So like, yeah, anything already that happens next is, because I'm about to get like probably very spoilery. Yeah. So one of my questions is, the show really plays out, in my opinion, like a puzzle box show, which I loved. I mean, I'm a sucker for a puzzle box show. So as soon as there started to be these mysteries and these elements of like, oh, they're kind of giving us like that, the ghoul's backstory, but they're also not. And I can tell it's important. Like as soon as we got into that, I was like, oh yes, I love this. But I was curious, how does that come from the game at all? Is there a mystery? I feel like you sort of referenced this a little bit with the, like the Vault Tech stuff was new in the show. And I guess that was part of my question, but is there more to that?
Yes. So absolutely. Every single Fallout game plays out like a puzzle box story in its main quest. So that's sort of, again, the thing to highlight is that every single game has a main quest line that you follow that is going to take you, you know, A, B, C, D. Usually there's multiple endings, though, based upon the decisions you make as part of that main quest. But there's always a main storyline. And then there's the side quest that you can go off and do other things. But just as an example, like I said, with Fallout 4, the entire quest is for you to figure out who woke your husband and your child out of a cryogenic sleep. Like, who did that and why? And where are they taking them? And so, you know, you wake up and you're completely confused. You walk out to the wasteland and you're like, it's what year? I've been asleep for how long, you know? And you are starting to freak out because you're thinking, is my son dead? You know, what's possibly happened in that time frame? And then through talking to different people in the world and going and doing different quests, you uncover more and more about what might have happened. And that usually leads you then down the path to whatever place you're going to end up and uncovering what really happened. And it's essentially exactly like the show, which I loved about it, because the show really hit the theme of a very classic Fallout story, which is just, you know, you are, my father's missing. I need to go find my father. You know, where might he have gone? Oh, I ran into three other people and they all have different motivations and different things going on. And it just leads you down this confusing kind of, you're trying to keep up path. And then eventually you get to a point where you've uncovered the big secret. So yeah, that's very typical.
So the fact that in the show, the big mystery, there's a handful of mysteries and some of them kind of like interplay, but the big one is like the vault that they're in the beginning, her dad and whoever are like the board members that were cryogenically frozen or whatever. And the fact that Vault Tech is the one that dropped the bombs, like that all being new to the show, does that bother you? That feels like an important like thing that they kind of decided for the show.
No, and I guess I'll liken it to in The Last of Us when we get the background with Ellie's mom and we kind of get that whole discovery of Ellie's, why she's immune, and they give us that explanation. And I remember you guys being like, oh, that wasn't that, how do you feel about that, right? Like that wasn't in the games. It's kind of like that because it doesn't actually impact or affect any canon. It doesn't change anything. It's not a retcon. It's an add-on because from everything you know from the games, you have no idea who dropped the first bomb. You know that it was a combination of the USA, of China, and of Russia, but you don't actually know who dropped the first nuke. There's various theories, but nothing concrete. So this is the kind of thing where we're like, oh, what if none of those three countries actually dropped the first bomb? What if it was Vault Tech and then all the other three assumed, oh, it must have been China, it must have been Russia, and they started an entire nuclear war over this psychotic concept of trying to, you know, put people in vaults and restart the world essentially and defeat communism. I mean, I thought it was genius. I was like, wow, what a cool add-on. And the fact that from hearing the game developers say, that's now going to be canon, that's now going to be true for the game universe also, I think it's awesome.
Is the game then similarly like a satire of communism? If you don't have that same like, oh, a company, I mean, not communism, sorry, of capitalism. If you don't have that core, like, oh, a company pushed this all into action, it was one of these countries, and then sort of everything unfolds. Like, does it have that same flavor to the game that feels like that is so embedded in the TV show?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the big ways that is a satire on capitalism is kind of the whole 1950s aesthetic, because it's actually based upon something that came out, God, what was it called? Worlds of Tomorrow, which was a 1950s science fiction anthology. And that's what the whole game is based off of. It's like this idea of what people in the 1950s like thought that the future would look like. And whenever they would like put out ads for technology and stuff, they'd be like, the world of the future. So Fallout was like, oh, let's play with that and let's actually have the world look that way. And so absolutely, they are mocking capitalism incessantly throughout the games in a lot of different ways.
So that's even even better on the writers to have captured that spirit and like just gone like a step further in making that the jumping off point. Very cool. Sorry, go ahead, Jess.
I guess since you said that, I'll just say I thought this twist was amazing. I was so into it. With mystery box shows, sometimes they reveal the mystery and you're like, okay, getting there was a lot more fun than the reveal. Mm-hmm. But I thought this was so cool. And it's the kind of reveal that's not like, oh, here's the big twist. It's a reveal that kind of feels like it sets itself up for more storytelling also. It's not just this like end piece. So yeah, that's just me fangirling or whatever over the show for a second. But stepping back to what you said about the adding to the canon. So this is where I'm like, I need help, I suppose, figuring out like, in your mind, what does that mean in terms of where they go with the games? Like how will that add to the games? What does that potentially add to the story of the game?
I think it just adds clarity, I guess, to what Vault-Tec really is, because we have this idea. I will say this, Vault-Tec plays a huge character in the games. It's more so just we don't fully understand their background and their story. What we do know is that there were 122, I believe, vaults that were created by them. And in the games, we know that every single one of those vaults, unbeknownst to many of the people buying their way into those vaults, they were going to be used for certain social experiments. So every single one of the vaults has something different that took place, which is really interesting because in the games, you most of the time come out of your own vault, but you also will come across other vaults when you're in the wasteland. And some of them are abandoned, some of them still have people in them, but every time you go in, you find remnants of whatever went on there. So some of them, they were doing horrible experiments on people, as you saw in Vault 4 in the show. Some of them, in one of the games, there's a vault where the intention was actually never to open the vault. And the social experiment there was to see what would happen to people in severe isolation for extended periods of time. So we know that Vault-Tec was doing some really sinister stuff. And we know that their intention was to do these little social experiments with each vault. But we did not know for sure they were the ones that made this happen for sure, definitively.
Okay,
so
that's
I think
so
that's cool because it adds to how evil they are, right, and their motivation.
Yeah, so it's like a bit more of the story than you would have gotten had they not made this show. It's cool that they created it to like fit so seamlessly alongside, even though so much of it was new, which is really what you said in the beginning, but I'm just like understanding it better now. It does seem like quite the feat. I have something that will switch gears a little, but before I do that, do you guys have more on whatever we were just talking about?
I don't think you're going to have an answer to this question, which is a bummer because I think, like you said, there aren't the main characters in the TV show don't actually have corollaries in the game. But maybe somewhat of it is like we see Goggins' character in the first scene with his daughter when the first bomb hits. And then again, I know we've already done spoiler alert. By the end of the season, we realize like his whole quest that we have been sort of not really realizing is to find his family. So he's also on, like you said, all of the Fallout games are, he's on his own little quest. But it does, like, I don't know if the games give any backstory on like, okay, when the bomb drops, like what happens then? Like, how did he get separated from his, his kid. I know that that's a character, like you said, is probably not in the Fallout games, but like, how are people surviving for 200 years? Is it all, if they're not ghouls, is it the cryogenics? Like, what are the mechanisms at play here? I don't know if you'll have any answers for that.
Yeah, Fallout loves a found family story or a quest to find your family. I mean, it's kind of their quintessential thing. So it wasn't surprising to me that that ultimately was his goal. And I think that could play out in a really interesting way. So as far as the living for 200 years thing, this is something that even I'm like, huh, I wonder what that's going to look like, mainly for Moldaver, because we now know with the McClanes that is because they were frozen in Vault 31. And we kind of got that whole reveal that those executives have been kept there and they wake them up periodically or whatever it might be. Right. With Moldaver, though, I'm like, okay, so she was at Shady Sands and she's been living in the wasteland. So at what point did they do something to her? Because she's not a ghoul. I don't believe that. Nothing tells me she's a ghoul. Especially if now we're 200 years into the future, she would start to have the skin lesions. There would be something going on there. She wouldn't look the way she does. So that doesn't make sense to me. There could be some form of tech we haven't seen yet that maybe they're going to reveal to us in the next season. Maybe she was using cryo. There's definitely a lot of things. But as far as nobody in the games just can live for 200 years, there's definitely got to be something that happened there. And I hope we get more information about her because I was confused.
Okay, yeah, she was, I had forgotten Moldaver, but that was another one that had sort of sparked that question of like, she clearly is not, at least we don't think she was in one of the vaults. She seems like someone who is sort of anti-vault tech from day one, but yeah, and yet she's around 200 years later. Okay, interesting.
And hopefully it was clear in the show, because again, I have the background info, but I thought they did a decent job. With the ghouls, it's really a matter of the amount of radiation that you continue to take in, right? And if you can't get your hands on that, you start to turn into a feral ghoul, which are the ones that are like trying to eat and attack people. So whenever you see him looking for the drugs that he wants to take, it's further irradiating himself to like be able to stay in some kind of human form of being a ghoul. So it can keep you alive for extended periods of time, but you have to keep drugging yourself.
I feel like they do a decent job of showing that with the scene where he's like trying to get it from the lab or whatever, and and he starts to kind of like lose it and then takes it. But I'm still a little confused how you turn into a ghoul. I just thought we weren't going to get an explanation, but then at the end when that other guy turns into the ghoul, I was like, wait, I'm so confused.
Yeah, the Thaddeus thing was really funny, because this is part of the thing too, where like I said, these games are so big and there's so much lore that even when I was watching that, I was like trying to remember. I'm like, okay, what would they have just given him? But there's actually a reference, and it's a really niche reference. But there's a reference to it in Fallout 4, I believe, because you come across another ghoul who's actually like a mayor of a specific town, and he kind of talks about how he became one, which was taking a essentially not very well tested drug to cure himself of an ailment, which is what Thaddeus does. That guy's like, hey, you need to fix your foot, take this. That because it wasn't tested and had a tremendous amount of radiation in it, it turned him into a ghoul, essentially, is about as much of that as we get. So it's not, I'm sure I could probably dig on the Fallout Wikipedia and find like some really intense explanation from some very niche thing you find. But for the most part, it's just suspend your disbelief. And, you know, he took a drug that could fix his foot and it turned him into a ghoul because of the amount of radiation.
And so we're supposed to sort of glean that you turn into a ghoul from radiation. And the ghoul state is like a you could live forever kind of thing, but you would go feral if you didn't continue to take radiation. Does that sum it up?
If you didn't, yeah. If there's like specific drugs that you kind of, and it's interesting because in the game, you have to take those drugs for certain things also. And then you can actually in the game become like addicted to certain drugs. And then you have to take something called Addictol that helps you get off of the drug addiction that impacts your stats in the game. Like it's very granular and specific, but yes, the idea is that there are specific drugs curated from radiation that help you remain in the ghoul state as opposed to going into the feral state.
Who in the wasteland is like the drug lord here? Like who's making all these drugs?
Well, there's a lot of different theories on that one, but
okay, yeah. We don't have to go fully into that. That's maybe something for a different day.
Yeah.
I had the same questions you had though, Jenny, with like, what happened to his family? How is it 200 years in the future and he's a ghoul? Like, I kept thinking maybe we were going to go back to that moment and they were going to show us more of like right after the last thing we see in the very beginning, and they didn't. And I was like, okay with that, but I had that question still. In some ways, that would be like my main criticism of this season, is just that they were doing so much and telling so many stories, and they had so much world building to cover that, like, I loved it, but I did still have questions, and I need the new episodes like right now. And I know that we're not going to get them for like 3 years.
Yeah.
The scientists, I mean, I know that I'm fixated on this dog, but that episode, the second episode with the scientists, like, we never went, that didn't seem like a vault. That seemed like something separate. And we like never touched that again. And I'm assuming we're going to go there in season two. But I was just sort of like, wait, hold on. What's that? But yeah, I felt
the same. And way. I can give some background on that without it really being a spoiler of any kind, because they do actually name drop the Enclave. Like, they say that multiple times.
Yeah.
That is what that group is. So the group where the scientist was experimenting on the dogs is a group called the Enclave, which is essentially what's left of very high ranking political, military, corporate figures. It's kind of like the quasi leftover government, if you will. So very, very, very high powered people that had put certain things in place of their own, but also in conjunction with Vault-Tec and, you know, the other sort of companies that you see in that round table room. But they are, like I said, their own high ranking organization. That's why they had a lot more stuff. If you notice, they had like power, and they had a lot of things that these other groups did not have. And they were doing tests on people, and various things were going on. So they're going to explore the Enclave more, I have no doubt, but that is what that group is.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. Many questions. But
was the Brotherhood of Steel clear to you guys on terms of their motivations or what they're for? I didn't think that was super clear in the show.
For me, I sort of saw them as like a, like you said, it was a lot of like quick show, don't tell. This is what people are like in the wastelands. And I was like, oh, it's like a pseudo religious group that came about probably in response to just like the way people are living. And so it made that sense. I was like, I can understand why this type of group would appear. It's reminiscent of a lot of other things in like our own history. But that was, I didn't like think about it too much further from there.
I think that's probably as much as I thought about it too, but I was definitely left wondering. Like, they didn't give us a lot on them.
Yeah, and like, based on what's going on with Maximus, that was his name, right? I was having trouble with all of the names.
Titus
of, like,
slash
who
Maximus.
He was, and then who. Exactly, yeah. So Maximus, I believe, is his actual name. There will be more on the Brotherhood of Steel now that they've essentially, like, you know, they're hailing him as the person that basically killed Maldivar, even though he didn't. And we'll see where that goes. This is getting on a whole other thing. I don't know that I loved that character. Did you guys like him?
I hated him. That was one of the reasons that season, like episode two or three, I was like, I don't like this guy. Why are we following him?
Yeah, I hated him also. I really didn't like him.
I don't think I hated him, but I was least interested in what was going on with him. I was also trying to figure out like the mechanisms behind their hierarchy and like what was going on with that armor. Is that all in the game, or was that made up for this?
Mm-hmm. No, power armor is huge. It's like one of the main images associated with Fallout is the power armor. So, and that actually, you guys probably noticed, they talk about the fact that that was used as war technology prior to the bombs dropping. So that was like actually military tech that they were using in the various wars that were going on before nuclear detonation. And the whole goal of the Brotherhood of Steel, and this again was not very clear, is they're kind of obsessed with maintaining and keeping ownership over post-war pre-war technology. So they want to have the control and the access over all of that. And so I guess that's why they're so interested in the same thing that these other groups are, which is the technology that Maldivar is after. Is to what I imagine be to power everything that they have, like to continue to keep the power of the pre-war military functioning. Whereas there's different motivations for the ghoul who's after it and, you know, and then Lucy, obviously, and the McLeans and all that stuff. So,
oh, I have two things in different directions off of that. The technology you're talking about, it's, I think, is that the cold fusion that everyone was trying get their hands on? I noticed that the Enclave had cold fusion. And so I was like, ooh, like tying Maldaver, because they insinuated that she was the mastermind behind cold fusion. And then it was sort of taken away from her. But then the Enclave, that sort of indicates that they are working with Vault-Tec. Is that a connection that's in that? Okay, interesting.
Very much so.
Yeah. And then separate, totally other thing from that is, if I can remember my train of thought, the cyber suits, they're bulletproof, but a bear can mess it up real good. Is that a thing you can scare to speak on?
Well, that, and then, you know, at the end when the ghoul character, why do I keep forgetting his name also? There's a lot of names in this show. It was a lot to keep track of.
They mainly call him the ghoul. I'm good with that.
But he, when he is joking and he's like, oh, I know that there's a weak spot, you know, right under the breastplate of that. I wonder if they fixed that, you know, post-war. And then he just shoots it and the guy's like immediately, you know, incapacitated, which I thought was hilarious. But that is typical Fallout. Like Fallout has no rules in terms of, it's just like, oh, there's this thing and it has all this power, but ha ha, if I shoot you here, you know, you're going down. So it's just, it's their humor, honestly.
Okay. That makes sense.
Jenny, did you have other questions in your list?
My other notes, some of them are notes, some of them are questions. We already talked about our dislike, at least Fallon and my dislike of Maximus. But I said Knight / Squire guy just makes bad choices and I don't like him. And I feel weird about the fact that there's a love story between him and Lucy, because Lucy seems so good in comparison. But
that's,
I get, like, I get it.
Part for sure. I mean, it just, it didn't really add anything for me though, the love story.
Yeah, it gave me the ick. A little bit. But then
Maximus.
I know.
Wasn't that bad?
I don't know what it was about that character. It truly was just like sort of the bad choices. I didn't like a lot of the stuff. Not that I didn't like the concept of the brotherhood, the knighthood, whatever. Brotherhood of men. The
brotherhood of
whatever it is. Of steel. The friend of Maximus that we find out put like razors in their own boot. Or whatever, like that sideline, that actor was in Wheel of Time, which I don't know if either of you watched, as a bad, like as an evil character. And I didn't realize it was the same person, because in Wheel of Time, they're like heavily made up, but it's the same voice and the same face. And the whole time I was just like, you're evil. I don't like you. And I think maybe that added to my dislike of that whole situation. That neither of those are questions, just me doubling down. I don't know if you can answer this, Fallon, but my final question, which I think I texted to you, was, what are the dogs for? And is that a spoiler if you tell us in the Enclave? And should we wait for season two? Jess, maybe you want to jump in and say stop. I don't know. You're more spoiler-averse than I am.
I actually don't really have a spoiler here. They could be for a lot of things. The dog is funny. The dog is like a very classic character of Fallout, and it's a really fun moment when they finally actually drop the name Dog Meat, because that is what the dog is always referred to as Dog Meat. And actually, when Thaddeus puts the dog in the little thing outside the gas station, that was kind of a fun nod, because the Red Rocket gas station is a big prominent feature in Fallout. And actually in Fallout 4, the Red Rocket is where you as the main character actually find the dog. Not in the exact same way, but to find him there at that gas station was a cool little detail. But yeah, the dogs could be used for a lot of things. The Enclave is up to a lot of things. They've done a lot of different things. I think they will play a prominent role in the next season, and there'll be a lot to see there for sure.
Cool. My final question that I didn't have prepped, but I just want to know, based on your experience with the games and then watching the TV show, like, do you have a group that you're rooting for? Like, do you have people that you like in this that maybe you didn't have an affinity for in the games?
I always, tend to err on the side, and it's funny because like even the choices that I'll make in Fallout games, right, when I'm playing my character and I get to choose who I align with, I'm always like the most anti vault tech, anti-capitalist, anti-establishment group that I can find is who I want to align myself with, because I think there is just this vitriol and this hatred for that group. And now even more so, I'm like, oh my gosh, not only did they because the intent of Vault Tech, right, was always to dupe people, because again, they were doing those social experiments. They were always doing something horrible. They were having people spend a ton of money to put themselves in these vaults that were then going to be used for all these different experiments. So they were always nefarious. But now I'm like, oh, and they dropped the bombs, and they're the whole reason that we went through nuclear warfare. Like, so I am definitely, I'm can tell that the kind of Lucy companionship storyline that we're about to see unfolds, I know I'm going to continue to not like Maximus, because I have a feeling he's going to go further down this Brotherhood of Steel path, at least for a little while. And I'm going to be more rooting for them figuring out more about Vault Tech and what happened, and hopefully finding lost family and all that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm in the same boat. I feel like I always wind up having an affinity for characters like the ghoul character, who does seem, even though he seems like he has a kind of evil, rough exterior at the beginning, when you get more of his backstory, you're like, oh, he's got some things that he wants
Cooper,
to make
right. That's his name. Cooper.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
I actually have one more question, and we can cut this out if it ends up being like, we already talked about this, but for some reason, I'm still confused about the timeline for the show.
Yeah.
Like, in the first scene, what year is it in the first scene? Like when the party blows up?
In the first scene is 2077. So that is the day the world ended.
Okay.
2077.
Is that the same in the games?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that part, it does follow the actual timeline. And then
correct,
it jumps like 200 something years. And that's where we pick up in the vault, right?
We are in for the TV show. The TV show takes place after everything in the game. So it's now the newest iteration of the Fallout universe.
That does answer my question. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So everything else came before.
And then in terms of like them talking about Shady Sands and stuff like that, like do those events fit in correctly to the timeline that exists for the games?
So all but with one potential exception that I have not accepted to be true. So there's like, of course, it's video games and it's, I love the video game world, but it's also a lot of neckbeards that are, you know, out there screaming into the void over little tiny changes and all canon and whatever. Some of it's justified. This particular one, I don't necessarily think is, and I'm going to try to explain this in the easiest way possible that does not spoil anything. So I told you at the very end, McLean is looking out into the distance and we see sort of a dark city. That is Las Vegas. There is a game called Fallout New Vegas, which is actually, many fans think it's the best one. It's a personal favorite of a lot of people. And it was actually developed by a different developer. So the only reason I'm saying that is because Bethesda Studios had this game developed by another developer called Obsidian. And so there were a lot of fans thinking, oh, well, is Bethesda trying to remove New Vegas as part of the lore or things that happened because it was developed by another game developer? Like there's all these theories. That's been completely squashed. They have every intention of including the events from New Vegas. The reason that there's a concern is because Fallout New Vegas takes place 15 years prior to when McLean is standing looking at it. So all of the events from that game are 15 years earlier. And 15 years earlier, that is a thriving city. They have power, they have access to a lot of resources, and that's all being powered by the Hoover Dam. And Robert House, who again is the guy you see sort of sitting in that executive boardroom, is head of Robco, and he is the leader of New Vegas. I won't give any more detail than that because I'm sure they're going to explore it in the next season, but that's why he's important and that's kind of why that storyline is important. Now, the New California Republic plays a huge role in that game because they're still a very prominent group that's still well-developed, and to everyone's knowledge, Shady Sands still exists. Now, it's not specifically mentioned, but nobody says anything in the game about Shady Sands being nuked. And so people are like, well, hang on a second. We spend all this time with the New California Republic. Supposedly Shady Sands was nuked during that time frame at some point, and nobody in the New California Republic mentions Shady Sands being blown off the face of the earth. Like, how is that possible? Fine, fair. But they also don't say anything about it specifically still existing. So I think it's okay, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that. But that's the concern. The other interesting thing here is that because New Vegas, as we see it now, has no lights, no electricity, it looks like a dead city, it's like, well, what happened? Well, in New Vegas, there's multiple endings. So depending on the decisions you make, different things happen. So now the show has to decide which of those endings they're going to make canon for what happens next. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, that sounds okay. Cool, actually. The way that like the games sort of are open-ended at the end. Yeah, I it feels like the kind of one that it's like, I could see how people would be like, I think people look for something to be wrong. Like, they're like so ready to be like, this doesn't match the game. So like, I can see how somebody would jump on that. But like you said, technically it sounds like they haven't done anything like that.
Well, and the other thing too, and this gets like even more granular, but when she goes into the classroom in the show and she sees the sort of timeline that they've been teaching the kids, and it says the fall of Shady Sands, right? And that's dated as 2277. But then there's another little arrow that points to a mushroom cloud. And so there's lots of people that are like, well, maybe Shady Sands wasn't blown up in 2277 because maybe that's whatever the fall was. Maybe there was a war and then the bombs fell at a different time. That's possible also. So, you know, people will zoom in on the craziest stuff, but I think it's going to be fine. And it's funny to me that they thought that they were going to try to remove it because, like I said, Fallout New Vegas is the most popular video game in the series. So the Fallout fans, everybody wants to see it. Who doesn't want to see a post-nuclear Las Vegas? That sounds awesome. Like, I know that they're going to do that, and I know they're going to do it justice. So it's just funny that the people melted down the way they did.
So people thought it was not in the show just because it wasn't mentioned, like, until the end?
People thought more so that they were going to retcon the events of New Vegas. So not that they weren't going to go there, but that they were going to go there and that they were going to completely delete everything that happens in the New Vegas game from canon and make it something different. And that's, and like, listen, you know, maybe they will change something slightly with the timeline, right? But it doesn't really alter all that much. Like, when Shady Sands was blown up, in my opinion, does not actually completely alter every single event. It could be kind of a plot hole, but I also think they're smarter than that. So I think there's going to be something up their sleeves that's going to make all that make sense.
Yeah. It feels like central enough that it feels like as a person who doesn't have the background, that it would have been a weird choice for them to just be like, oh, we'll make it 15 years later, but like, we're going to change this big thing. And like, no one will care. We'll just change it just because, like, why wouldn't they have just placed it somewhere else in the timeline?
Right. It sounds like they've been meticulous enough with the existing backstory of the games up to that point that they would have thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cool that it's, well, I guess I don't know if it's been widely received well by the game community besides you, but it's cool that you like it at least.
You, the game community, in our eyes.
Yes. You speak for everyone who plays video games for us.
Ooh, it's a lot of pressure. I'm going to get some crazy comments. I will say that out of all the people that I am close to that love the Fallout games, people that love it even more than I do, like people that have gone back and they've played the very, very OG first one from 97. I mean, people that like live and breathe Fallout love it. Everybody's having a great time watching it. I haven't really heard any complaints because I think they did a tremendous job of just giving us a classic kind of whodunit, where are they, Fallout story. And at the end of the day, that's all we could ask for. And we got to see a really cool world. And props to Amazon, because I'm not going to lie, I have disliked a lot of Amazon stuff. And so I was really worried when it was going to be an Amazon production, but they made the world look awesome. Like, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think Jenny and I were talking about that in a previous podcast. Like, Amazon is very hit or miss, lots of misses. But yeah, this one feels like much better than a lot of their stuff.
I mean, with production, but also with what we sort of touched on slightly earlier, but like the character arcs coming from like having the framework of the games, but having to create these new characters and their arcs. Like, yeah, they do have, again, a framework of this found family or quest story, but I think they did a really good job at, I mean, Lucy is the one that hits the hardest for me, like her final scene and her decision to shoot her ghoul mother and like change everything she's thought about. Like, she's had a true transformation in the Wastelands. That was just like a very mm-hmm. cool for any type of TV show. Like, I would have watched that in any format. And so like everything yeah. coming together is very impressive to me.
Yeah. And I think they had a much different challenge than the HBO sort of development of Last of Us. It's still difficult to adapt a video game no matter what, but it was a much more unique challenge to have to do it this way. In some ways, more difficult, I think, just because there's so much to play with and there's so much that your audience might want to see. How do you try to incorporate all of that and make people happy? So I was excited about it. I'm thrilled to be living in this time. These video game adaptations are knocking it out of the park. I hope to see many, many more. It's
great. Do you have a wish list for like what you want next? If they were only to make like two more, what would you want to see made?
Well, the other one that's done great in recent years has been The Witcher. Now, technically, that's not a video game adaptation because there's books. So that's a little bit different because the video game was adapted from the books and then the show kind of adapted off both of those. So that's kind of cheating the system, but still, it's been great. So that was a big one. Similar from Bethesda Studios, I would love to see a Skyrim. I don't know if you guys have heard of that game before.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I would love to see that get developed. I actually would love to see a redo of Assassin's Creed because that movie is absolute trash garbage and was one of my favorite video games ever. And I think that if they did it in a television format, more fleshed out, it would be amazing. I mean, there's so much to work with within the video game world. It would be amazing. I also hated Uncharted, for the record, if you watched
it. I was actually just going to ask that because I feel like some people liked it, but I mean, I haven't played the games, but I thought it was like a pretty crappy movie just in general. But then I actually, this segues me really nicely into my last question, which I had wanted to ask. It might be if it's too theoretical or too thorny that you don't have to answer. But do you think in general it's fair to say video game adaptations used to be generally pretty bad and now they're generally pretty good? And do you have any theories as to why that might be?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think the video game community at large thinks that they've been historically bad. That's why anytime that a new one gets announced, we're all collectively like, I don't know. I maybe just leave well enough alone. I mean, I even felt that way about Last of Us, even though I ended up loving it and I'm so happy it was made. When they first announced it, I was like, can we not? Like, can you not touch my precious little thing? I would really appreciate that. But I think the difference is a couple of things. Money is one of them. So I think video game adaptations are getting more investment. And that's probably just because the theory has been proven to be successful at this point. So I think studios are a little bit less avoidant of wanting to adapt video games. I also think the creativity in streaming is huge because it's no longer just like these two, three big major movie studios, right, that are talking about producing these things. We now have all of these different streaming services, different developers that are interested in producing something really well. So I think that's a big piece of it. And also the creative freedom. And then the last one that I think is huge is how involved the video game developers are in these adaptations. The fact that Neil Druckmann was as deeply involved in The Last of Us and the fact that it was made by a director who's a big fan of the games, right? He wanted to take care of it. And I think we've got the same thing here. Bethesda Studios was super, super involved. Was on set all the time, was making sure that the plot points and all the canon was clear so that nothing, you know, was retconned. So I think that the more those individuals can be involved, the better product we're ultimately going to keep getting. And it's also a huge benefit to the video game studios because here's what's happening right now. For instance, Fallout 4 comes out within one day. So in 24 hours, 1 million people signed up to play Fallout 76, which is their online game, which is interesting to me. I'm like, I guess there are a lot of people that like online games, but 1 million people in one day. So that is giving so much additional cash to Bethesda Studios. And again, I've told you guys, these games take like 8, sometimes 10 years to make. So a lot of times these studios are, how do we make more cash? How do we get more money into our studios so we can keep making these things because we haven't actually put out a product in a long time? So if they do this in conjunction and then all of a sudden people are buying the video games again, they can put up new updates to the game so that people are, you know, people who've played it before are interested in dabbling back in it. So it's kind of like really smart for everybody. Like everybody wins in this situation when it's successful. So I think I hate to, you know, bring up capitalism in this situation, right? But like at the end of the day, if people are making money, then they're going to keep doing what they're doing.
It does make you wonder why they were making adaptations before without the developers involved. I mean, I think that with books too, like, why are we doing that? You're always going to piss people off. It's never going to be as good.
Exactly.
Jenny, did you have anything else?
No, I was just wondering if they were ever going to make a Zumbinis TV adaptation.
A what?
Are you not familiar with Zumbinis, Jess?
Zumbinis? Zumbinis, is that what you're saying?
Zumbinis. It's like the very first video game I ever played.
I'm going to need you to spell it for me later.
We don't need to go into it. It's a core experience for me, and it disturbs me that you don't know it, but we'll talk about it offline.
That one was not in my childhood.
No, I don't have anything else to say. I am excited for season 2. And yeah, like if this is what video game adaptations continue to look like, sign me up. I don't think I'm ever going to be, I mean, speaking of something like Zumbinis, Sonic has never called to me. Things like, I don't know. Yeah, like there's a specific type of TV show that I'm all in on. And so far, Last of Us, Fallout are like hitting the mark. So it's exciting.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical. Like when they come out, I'm like, The Last of Us was coming out. I was not interested in watching it. It proved me obviously very wrong. But and then the same with this. I was like, I never played that game. I just assumed I wouldn't be interested in it. And then it proved
and
me so
that
wrong.
Car one.
Twisted Metal. I actually also That's really one. Liked that. So it's like, I can't sit here and say I don't like video game shows. I like them all now anyway.
Well,
like nowadays.
You like three of them.
Well, true. Oh, yeah. I never watched Halo. Have you seen either of those, Fallon?
No, I can't even.
Like, I don't want to talk about it.
It's not terrible. It's just
terrible. Is it bad? Yeah. So they're not all good nowadays.
No, they're not. They're not. The last thing I'll say, just because it's a fun fact, at the, I think it's not quite the last episode, but one of the last episodes when somebody finally says, I think it's the episode when they're all talking about Vault-Tec being the ones to drop the bombs, and somebody says war never changes. That is like the tagline of all Fallout games, is war never changes. And it's generally because at the very beginning of every game, when you're getting the introduction cutscene, it's always like this narrator who's like, war never changes. And then it like goes into whatever the background is, you know, when the bombs fell, what the history is of the world. So that was something that everybody was kind of waiting to hear, including myself. I was like, they better say war never changes. And they did. So I was happy about that.
Nice.
Cool. Well, that's all from me as well. So it sounds like we can wrap. Thank you again so much for joining us. I wish that this were selfishly, I guess, in a weekly release so we could keep talking about it. But this was still very fun and informative.
Yeah. Maybe when we get news of a like definitive season 2, either like new cast announcement or whatever it may be, we can come on even before the new episodes drop. I'm crossing my fingers as though.
Yeah. And if you're interested in doing a prequel episode for The Last of Us season 2, I've got all the knowledge you could need.
Every time I see there's like a news story or like a casting, I'm like, I have questions and I need to know, but I'm also scared because anytime something would come out, you'd be like, don't look. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's why you have to ask me. Make sure you ask me because I will make sure you don't get any of the information you should and only the information
okay,
that you should.
We do need to schedule a follow-up then because I do have questions, but yeah, they have probably still like a year left until that comes out. Mm-hmm. So we have time, but thanks again. And for our listeners, make sure to follow us on our newsletter. If you haven't already, we'll link it in the show notes and let us know what you guys thought of Fallout.
Find links to follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter in the show notes of this episode. Thank you for listening to Double Take. If you like what you heard, please support us by subscribing and leaving a review. See you next time. The Double Take podcast is produced by Jess Ball and me, Jennifer Cullen.